Okay, so until the end of the... Oh, yes, you were saying the sirens kept going and going...
Yes, we had to report.
Yes.
Aircraft approaching and all clear when the raid was over. And I report 1:35 siren, 1:40 all clear. In 1:50 a siren, all clear, 3 minutes later, when the thing exploded. And then that was more or less coming to the end, when the doodlebugs came and then the rockets came. We had to go out and help the people to put the fire out with little buckets and a pump.
Yeah.
There's one particular area which I remember. My colleague, a house was burning, an old house. Let's go in. So we went in, and there was a husband and wife. He was very fat, could hardly move, and his wife was sick. And I said, you better get out. It's burning, and we can't help you in a little while. There's a wooden stair that will burn out. Well, we can't go, we can't move. So I let them go. When I came downstairs, the fire was worse. I said to my wife, we don't listen to them, let's drag them down. So we went in, and him and myself, we got hold of the wife, number one. We more or less dragged her down, put in the street, we came back. By that time the ceiling had already started coming down. And we got hold of the husband. Well, let me tell you, in the morning there was nothing there of the house. It's all burned down right to the ground. And I said to him, see, if you wouldn't have dragged them out, they'd be roasted by now. These things happened all the time. Like, we put out another fire, and with a little hand pump on the bucket of water, that's all we had. We didn't have any hose. And the fire was nearly out. Just a little bit here in the corner, there in the corner. I said, let's finish it. And the fire brigade came in. Fellas, that's enough. We're taking over. We're outside with a big hose. So we go out. And it turned out the big hose was there and there was no water to pump it from. So that burned out too. So these things happened all the time.
Yeah.
And that was our job.
So you always stayed in London during the war?
Yeah.
Yes. When you after the war ended and you left the army, right? What rank were you?
Yeah, I was a private. A private, no rank of any description.
Okay. Well, that's a rank. Private is a... okay. But it sounds like you did very brave work. Did you get any medals for your...
We don't have medals in the home with the army. Everybody had to do that. It wasn't something special. Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to make a note of that. You felt that what you did wasn't special.
It
sounds
great. It wasn't special. Everybody had to do it. The Pioneer Corps, by the way, it came back. It was called the Pioneer Corps.
Yes.
You know, pioneers.
Okay, that's the... Okay, I've heard, yes. Pioneer Corps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, the slip of work.
Yes.
Work for the Pioneer Corps.
Yes. Well, what did you do after the war?
Well, what I did, even during the war, I was a dentist in Austria.
I see.
I wasn't allowed to work in England as a dentist. As a technician, I learned a trade when I got there. nature repair service. That was legal.
Okay.
So I had learned the trade as a denture repair service. You had your broken denture, fix it, and you pay and you go home. And
yes.
That's how I started my own business with £5 in my pocket. £5 doesn't sound anything, but £1.16 was the wage for a week's wages.
Yeah.
So a £5 wasn't far. I had a wife and a child.
Yes.
And rent to pay, and nobody. We're alone.
Yeah.
From then on, I just went up. I worked and worked, and very soon I had enough money to buy new stuff and new furniture.
Yes. And so you lived in London for how long?
Well, I lived there for 16 years, not 16 years, no, I left in 55.
You left England?
England. No, wait a second. These things, it's harder.
So, where did you, to come to Canada?
I went to Canada, came to Canada.
Where?
Yeah, but in here you have, in Toronto.
Okay.
My brother was already there, and that's why I picked Toronto, because I knew I could stay with him until I get on my feet.
Yes. And how many children did you have then?
I had then one, and then the other one when the war finished is two.
I see.
A boy and a girl.
Yes. Well, I have a couple of questions about being Jewish.
Yeah.
And I wondered if being Jewish affected your experiences in, well, I mean, you told me it affected you because you fled from Austria. What about in England?
Oh, English people were absolutely nice. I have no bad words to say about them. And to them, it didn't seem like they knew what a Jew was, if he had horns or not.
Okay.
I absolutely have no critics for the British.
You felt comfortable there?
I felt very comfortable.
Were you able to live a Jewish life? I mean, observe?
No, you were lucky to have enough to eat, not only have kosher food. The only thing you could get free was fish and vegetable. And in those days I didn't know too much about black market, so you just existed.
Mm-hmm. The next question maybe is geared more for Canadians who were fighting, but did you know that Canada didn't allow in the Jews from Europe?
I didn't. Then I didn't. No, yeah. Now I know.
Yeah. When you... Mm-hmm. What you found out when you came to Canada?
No, during the war you found out nothing.
Yeah.
But now I know that they have... They wouldn't, not all of them, but quite a lot of them didn't want Jews.
Yeah. Okay. What about you? You have some good memories, some bad memories?
I have both.
Yeah. Is there something that's, well, you said that the way that you felt very comfortable, but is there a very good memory that you have of your time in the Pioneer Corps?
Not really. As a matter of fact, we were four in our company which were building a music. I played the violin, another one played the piano, one played the accordion, and he was not Jewish. And the other one was a drummer, he was Jewish. There were three Jews and one Christian. We formed a company when it was called for any musicians. And then we had fun, because with this, the company was loaning us a car in the evening to drive to the villages and play. That's the one nice point I can recall.
Okay. What about a worst memory?
The worst, when I was interned and by the British.
Where?
It takes time. It's only 70 years back.
Only.
Port Huntington.
Port Huntington.
There was a school which was a prison camp of all the Jewish refugees mostly. And we had to carry wood from one corner to the other. And I turned around and I hit a lieutenant on the head and he fell over. And they blamed me, I did it on purpose. So they put me away for a week in one room. I didn't talk to anybody. And they couldn't see anybody. But luckily enough, one of the officers was from the 1914 war, a major. He came in and he spoke King's German, high German to me. I says, you learned this in Austria. So when did you live there? So he told me, during the 1416 war, and we became friends. And he used to bring me the mail, and then I had to give it back to him, and he put it in the office. So I used to get the mail, and odd specialties from that officer. So when I say the British generally were very nice.
Do you have any message for our young people today about war, about your...
For our own people? Yes. Not to be as stupid as the Jews were in Austria. We haven't done anything, why should we run away? And they learn a lesson that because they haven't done anything, that's why they're going to the gas chamber.
When you say that not to be, you mean to the Jews today shouldn't be as stupid as the Jews in Austria, should stand up and fight for their...
Well, that's the obvious thing to do. Mm. And even if the few Jews couldn't fight the German army, but in Poland they stood up against them, they had to die, but at least they stood up against them. I felt my job was really to save a few Jews, which I did. I did find in a book, not only a Jew, I tried to save a Christian too. Give him my visa so he can get to England in a hurry, because he had a damaged head. And the doctor told me, if he has one more excitement, he'll die. So I knew that he would get his visa in about 2-3 weeks, and I had mine to go to England. So we swapped, I gave him mine, and was waiting for his. In the meantime, Hitler came to visit with me. So that was one fella. And my best friend, I crossed the border twice to take him over the border. But the first time, he couldn't go because the business was so good, he couldn't leave. And the second time, I crossed again, risking my neck, the Gestapo already had him. He was 5 years in the concentration camp. And when he came out, he used to tell me the most gruesome stories that you can imagine. The way he survived was that he had himself nailed into the floorboard and lying down there, you know, like to build a wooden hut, and there's a sand, and he said, put 4x4s across, and they lifted up a few boards, and he laid himself inside, hoping that he can hear the British coming, or the Americans coming, and to get out of this. That's how it happened. He was nearly dead when he heard some Americans. So he knocked on the wooden boards, and they pulled the boards up and took him out. So he had to live through that and to hear the story of your best friend, to realize what some people suffered. But then he turned out to die and leave $25 million. He came out with a pair of shoes.
Yeah. So many did. They couldn't believe, right? They didn't believe that.
No.
Well.
I see my brother Sam, which is a very short story in there. After he escaped, the police took him to the death camp, and he jumped from the train. He finished up in Sweden, and in Aachen, where he crossed over, found a way over to the Belgium. He took a Jewish man across, not for money, just to help him. And when they got across, that Jewish man gave him a big gold chain from a watch. Mm-hmm. And that's, he lived on it. And my brother, every time he needed to go on one of his trips, he used to drive back all the way to Vienna to pick up the poor Jews from Triton Bezirk. I don't know if you know what that means. The second district where the Jewish ghetto was. He knew that they hadn't got the money to escape. So he used to drive there, pick up, load up the school bus, and drive them back to Belgium and cross them over. Mm-hmm. And after the third time, they caught him. And he used to clip a piece of the gold chain every time and cash it in so he can pay for the gas and pay for the expenses.
And that was your brother?
My brother. So there were quite a few heroes.
Oh, yes, indeed. Now, where are your children now, you said?
Well, my daughter is married in Chicago. She's a lawyer and has two kids, a boy and a girl. And the other daughter is in La Jolla, California, and she has also got a boy and a girl.
So you have two daughters?
Yeah.
In California. When did you move to Victoria?
Well, I was married 4 times. I broke the record, I think. And I lived in Victoria. When did I move to Victoria? Oh, about 12 or 13 years ago. And I was married to a woman that eventually ran into my, say again, see, if I don't tell the whole story, I had to go to my accountant and about this time of the year. And she said, I'd drive you home. I said, no, I'd rather walk. I'm happy walking. No, I'd drive you. So she drives me home, and my house stands a little high up. There's a driveway, and the street will be pulling up in the driveway, and I'm trying to get out, and there comes my car backing up, bring me right to this car, my legs between my Volvo and another car was in. And it was sticking in my mind. And then I got my divorce from her. But when you talk, have you got experience? Something, all kind of experience.
I'm sure. But why did you move to Victoria?
Well, because the climate was supposed to be so good, and actually, my friend Willie, the guy that I mentioned to you, had buried under the floorboard.
Yes, sir.
He had read in that book, he was in Germany, in Aschaffenburg. He had written a book that Victoria had the best climate in the world.
Oh, okay.
So he phoned me up because I had written to him, I just passed my real estate exam. So he thought I know something about real estate, which I didn't. And he phoned up and says, would you come with me? I'm fed up with these Nazi bastards, I can't stand them, and I want to get out. So sure, I'll come with you. So he came to Victoria, and we to Vancouver, and we went to the car, and we went to Victoria, and all around. And he liked it very much, and I liked it. So we made a deposit for him, and money he had a lot. Average, the beautiful house was 10,000,
yeah.
But he bought one for 50,000, which a lord from Austria had built. The downstairs was like a museum, carved wood, but beautiful, right into the ocean. And he was very happy. And said, I'll take over, not to worry, I'll finish the deal. When he got in the airplane, he got worried. And when he landed in Germany, he phoned me, how would you get the deposit back? I got cold feet. So he didn't. We finished the deal, and that's how I got to know Florida, Victoria. And when I had enough with living with this woman, I want to get away. So I said, well, let's sell the house here and let's go to Victoria. And that's what happened.
Okay.
I lived in Victoria for a while, and then I had this accident and finished with her too. And Sunrise was the next stage where I was moved to because I couldn't walk. And 2 years later, in Sunrise, this came for sale, and I bought it.